I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and on video, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good. Thank you.
I was sitting on my sofa with my laptop on my lap, which is appropriate, of course, watching CNBC, and I heard a voice. I was just looking at my screen. I heard a voice. I thought, what's that familiar voice? Looked up, and your face was staring at me through my big screen TV. Bigger than normal, John. Yeah, that's good, that. So when did you record that, then?
That was Monday morning, first thing.
Oh, okay. I don't know what you were talking about, because I was too busy saying to my wife, oh, that's John. I speak to John, and I reckon that's John there, the TV.
we were talking about the BHP's offer for Anglo American. Oh, and yeah. Look, we're not sure that BHP is going to end up buying Anglo, but what Anglo have been given a massive kick up the backside by this offer. It's in effect, it's a hostile offer, although they're trying not to be too hostile about it. And Anglo are doing a lot of the things that BHP kind of want them to do. It looks like Anglo will now spin out Anglo Platinum, because the investor, do investors really want to own PGMs? Do they want to own platinum and palladium these days? We're not sure. I mean, you want to own platinum if fuel cells are going to take off, because fuel cells use a lot of platinum. The rest of it's used in, you get platinum and palladium in jewelry. But auto catalysts is the main market. Platinum is mainly in diesel autocatalysts, so people aren't buying diesel vehicles the way they used to, although loadings on diesel trucks, buses, vans, things like that are going up, as in the amount of platinum within the catalyst for those. Also hybrids. People are buying more hybrid electric vehicles, and that means every hybrid has a small ICE engine in it. Mm-hmm. And that uses platinum and palladium. So it's not like game over yet. But ultimately, I think we're all going to end up driving electric vehicles for lots and lots of really good reasons. And that means the market, or the demand for platinum and palladium, will fall off. So yeah. You're going to get peaks and troughs along the way. But getting back to the original story, Anglo will sell that off. They want to keep the iron ore in South Africa, which BHP doesn't want, because BHP don't want anything to do with South Africa. It's understandable why. The rest of the stuff, the copper, which is what they really want. I think Anglo is going to run with that. They're just going to work harder to be a better business. Now, in the meantime, I think BHP can divert their attention to maybe buying First Quantum, Freeport Mormoran, Filo. There's a whole bunch of businesses that BHP could go and buy, which would still give them more copper production. And that's where everybody wants to go. I mean, just about every investor in the world is looking at buying into copper if they can, because, if you look at the copper market, there was a big squeeze this week on COMEX. Prices jumped to 11,400 and something. Some technical reasons for that, but also some good positive fundamental reasons in that the world is using more physical copper and will can do, and nobody knows where it's all going to come from.
Yeah, well, the ground. Hopefully, unless or Mars. But that's a chart of copper. It is spiking up to the previous highs. It got, 8th of March, pretty much, it got to, 10,800. And now it's up to, it's just trying to get above that. But it's rallied quickly. Sometimes when charts rally that quickly, they have to have a sideways consolidation. I was just looking at Anglo. I went about it the wrong way here. I looked at the Anglo-American chart. And you can see here, it's been, in a downward trend pretty much since, I'd say, July or April last year. It was at 42 pounds there. And it hit a low, when was this? Back in December 23, £16, sorry. And then it started to rally from like the 5th of March, on the rally strongly. I thought, what's going on here? And then the offer, so it rallied from early March to midway through April, and the offer there was on the 14th, pretty much, or 24th. Is it 24th? It's 24th from a statement there. So you're thinking, why was it rallying so strongly? But a month prior to that, why would that be, John? What do you think?
Well, I believe Elliott Associates were building up a stake in Anglo American.
Ah, okay.
And those clever hedge fund guys taking a view that there might be a takeout, or that Anglo were going to have a bit of a shakeup. I mean, it's of the major mining companies, Anglo has underperformed, and once in a while, these things have a shakeup and they catch up.
Yeah, what's the market cap now of this? 35 billion. So isn't that what they offered them originally?
Yes.
Is that right? Around about that level? Yeah, so here we are. So all share offer.
So when BHP made the first offer, BHP shares went down and Anglo shares went up. So because it was an all share offer, the value of the offer became less. Mm-hmm. So they revised the terms. So they offered 15% more shares in BHP in effect. But actually, the value of the revised offer was only 10% higher, and it's not a knockout offer by any means. Now, would you prefer BHP paper to Anglo American? Yeah, I guess you would. But
look at the chart. I would, yes. Yeah.
But if management are really going to turn this, going to improve this business, then maybe you do want to hold Anglo paper.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You got. But the BHP is a bit of a wedge here, so it'll either go up or down here, depending where it'll go. But it must be exciting when you're, on a board, director, CEO of a big company, and you're going to sort of make a big offer of a company as a rival or, a complementary. It must be, because 35 billion, it's a lot of money, isn't it? It's not messing around. It's a big move, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, you're bringing on a whole pile of new work, because everybody's got to justify what they're doing and why they're doing it, and huge amounts of increased scrutiny and an awful lot of meetings with advisors and advisors talking about regulators and lawyers. And, unfortunately, these offers are very distracting for management teams. So you've got to run the business as well. Mm-hmm. They're going to be busy boys right now.
Yeah, well, shouldn't they just say, listen, we're offering you this, £20 a share or BHP Billiton. Take or leave it. I don't want to hear from you. I don't want one email from you unless you accept it. Okay, I'm cracking on with my work. Thanks very much. And then just step away. That's the way to do it when you go on holidays and you go through these bazaars and you bargain. You've got to walk away, haven't you? You've got to walk away. They chase you down the street sometimes. Okay.
And it's the only way. You're right. It's the only way.
And to be genuine, you've got to be prepared to walk away. That's it. And you've got to put it. But will there be other people, do you think, out there now looking at Anglo-American?
Yes, there are. I mean, we are aware that Glencore are looking.
Oh, okay.
You can be absolutely sure that Rio Tinto are taking a look at it.
Oh, yeah.
Both of those companies could make gains. What is important to know is that all these offers are subject to regulatory approval. When Glencore bought Xstrata, the Chinese regulator required them to sell one of the copper mines. Now, if you feel you need to abide by the demands of the Chinese regulator, and if they demand that you sell one of your copper mines, is the deal worth doing?
Yeah, Xstrata, that isn't it? It's a blast from the past. I've forgotten about Xstrata.
Not that long ago.
How long was that then?
Well, I think we're talking 6 or 7 years, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay. Marvelous. All right. Well, that's good. And is it such a thing as a price target for copper? I mean, do you have? Is it, you know, can people see it going a lot higher than this? Because we are. Let's go back to tons.
Well,
now 10,900, pretty much.
A ton. I think the way to refer to look at it is, at what price does the market start to invest in new copper mines again?
Yeah.
And the consensus in the industry at the moment seems to be $15,000 a ton.
Okay.
And that number comes out from various sources. I think Glencore might have mentioned it. Robert Friedland, who runs Ivanhoe Mines, he may have mentioned it. If you know, for, the world needs this copper, and it's not going to get it unless the price is high enough for people to say, okay, right, we can hedge forwards, we can sell forwards in the copper market, and that means we can spend another $5 billion on building a new copper mine somewhere. In fact, there are some smaller mines being built, but small mines don't really do it. You need a few new big ones, because we can see demand for copper going from 25 million tons a year today to maybe 40 million tons by about 2050. And really, I don't know anyone in this industry who knows where that copper is going to come from at current prices.
Yeah, so there we are. So the price will probably have to go. And of course, you need, it's a very complex thing, isn't it, building a mine? Because like I say, 15,000, but you need that to be sustainable. You just want to put a spike up and spike down. But I assume it will be a sustainable rise above that. Because if it's economics 101, isn't it? If you've got the demand, the supply is, you know, pretty much stationary, the price will have to go up. So it's going to get there, I suppose. But is there the resource out there, you know, a decent sort of grade at certain depths or what, or now? Because, I mean, you said a while back that in Chile they have to dig deeper and the grade isn't as good. So is there areas of the world where there's apparently, you know, good grade at decent depths?
Well, in Chile, yes, the grade, it's very difficult running those mines at the moment. And in fact, the risk of catastrophic failure in the pits is rising all the time. You can go into places like the Congo for good grade, but it's difficult. It is really difficult. You've got to get the government on your side, the local governors, the people. And you've got to find people who are prepared to work. maybe Justin, maybe some of that.
The only difference between getting them on your side and not is just, you know, how much you're going to pay. Let's be honest. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you know, if you're going to help the environment, employ people, communities, you've got to pay up for it. I mean, you've got to pay for that. And that's that'll grease the wheels kind of thing.
One way or another, yes. But you've also got to find people who are prepared to work in those places. And it's not that easy to find experienced people who are happy to work in the DRC.
No, I suppose you're right. Again, military bodyguards, all that stuff, you're fine. Driven in a tank to the work and back. And there we are. Okay. All right. Well, let's have some individual companies, John. You're going to mention, who is it? What's happened to Cornish Metals today? Because I did notice, I always look through sort of big rises and fallers of a day, and Cornish was amongst them. It literally, day chart. There we are, and it's up like 20-odd% a day. What's the news there?
We're not really sure what's going on here. People in Canada have been selling the stock, and we don't know why they've been selling the stock. But we see you get to 2:30 in the afternoon, and there just seems to be a wave of selling coming out of Canada. Management put out a statement saying they know of no particular reason why the stock should be coming down. So we just don't know. And it kind of seems cheap. So we really don't think there are any fatal flaws in this project. We think the management team is good. Yes, they lost. They had a changing of the guard. The former chief executive has been moved on. And Ken Armstrong is now running the show along with Owen Mylock. They're a reasonably good team. So I think the company's in a good state. They've got more water to pump out of the mine. But, you know, you remember those stories about cows and sheep being washed into the mine? I mean, they, they were laughable. They simply weren't true. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there's a seller out there who just wants to sell.
Yeah. But is it a significant holder? How much do they hold? I mean, if they are they not notifying the market, or what's going on there?
We haven't seen any notifications yet. There's a big shareholder of Cisco, could be them, but we don't know.
Can I say, the CEO, whoever types out these RNSs, are they caps lock, stuck on their computer? Every title is in capitals. Corus Metals responses, share price. So they're shouting every title. Positive PE results for South Crofty Timber. Stop shouting.
I'll suggest somebody gets a new keyboard.
Yeah. Surely they've got enough money for a new keyboard. This, like, I can't help it. My caps lock is called on. Just get on with it. Okay. Sounds like I'm shouting everything. Look at it. All the way down. Oh, in fact, no. There's one there where the caps lock, they managed to get it working there on the 30th of October, filing an updated MRE technical report. Then back the capitals. Oh, they're back on. Stuck back on again. I hit it too hard.
Yeah, it could be a sticky key, yeah.
I know. Okay, Aterion, what's happening there? What are they up to?
They've been doing lots of the groundwork for preparing for drilling. So they're going to start drilling in the third quarter. They're working in connection with Rio Tinto, who are a joint venture partner. Rio Tinto are also have a cooperative agreement with the government of Rwanda. So they're really on board when it comes to Rwanda. The projects are lithium and tantalum pegmatite pipes. So we like pegmatite pipes, good hard rock material for mining and processing. Rwanda's got quite a number of these because, in fact, there's usually tin in there as well. You've got tin, tantalum, and lithium sometimes. Not sure about the geology of all that, but we think they'll turn up a decent amount of lithium. We can't be sure until it's drilled. But I think it feels like a good business. It feels like something that will come right.
Yeah. Okay. So Rio Tinto's operational field teams have collected 270 rock chip surface samples. I've spoken to Charles a few times, actually. Nice guy, isn't it? What else? Was it Sovereign Metals you're going to look at as well? Let me just get the list up here. Sovereign, is that on your list, John?
Yeah, I had a few days in Malawi last week with Sovereign Metals, and they had a big tour of experts from Rio Tinto. I think 16 guys from Rio Tinto were down there kicking the tires, offering advice. Quite a lot of advice, I suspect.
Why were they kicking the tires? Surely they got other things to do than kick tires.
Well, it's an expression, Justin.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You don't mean literally kicking the tires, yeah.
Well, but people do. People do kick tires. When they look at machinery, they just have this urge to kick the tire for some reason.
Yeah. Do you think to travel all that way, just kick tires?
Yeah, well, look, this is a world-class rutile deposit. So if you want to produce titanium pigment, titanium dioxide, or titanium metal, rutile is the best raw material to start off with. You know, forget the rest of it. Mm. I mean, you can start off with ilmenite, but then you've got to spend quite a lot of money to upgrade the ilmenite to rutile. So if you start off with rutile, you're already halfway there. This is the world's largest deposit. There are two other rutile deposits that I know of that are probably closing down. Kabwe in Kenya for base resources is being closed. Sierra Rutile, which is now owned by somebody else, also probably going to get closed, we think. And then there's Toliara in Madagascar, also owned by base resources. That has some rutile in it, but they don't have a mining permit yet, so that's not coming on stream for a few years. So Sovereign Metals, they are very, very lucky indeed. It's an enormous deposit. And having Rio Tinto in there as investors, because Rio's owned 15%, hugely valuable. But not just valuable because they're getting cash from Rio Tinto. They have a cash investment for Rio Tinto. But also they're getting tons of good advice.
Yeah. And of course, someone like Rio Tinto, you know, wouldn't we take a stake in that unless it's worth their while? They're not stupid. And they want a return, so they obviously, and that's based on the project, isn't it? So,
look, that's a good thing. Yeah. Whether Rio Tinto are in there or not, this is a world-class deposit. for the production of titanium or titanium dioxide.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about Kavanko? That's really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not bad. So, a couple of things going on here. They are drilling again in the Kalahari. So they announced that they were going to get going on that drill program. They also acquired a gold project in Zimbabwe, and they're looking at developing gold production from, just to start with, from gold tailings. So that's a nice, low-cost way of getting gold production to in relatively short order. And they're well-backed. And, as we see, there's quite a lot of confidence in the stock.
Yeah, nice rally that. We can see that. I like a stock like that, the chart that, because you can see here, it's previous support pretty much at 0.9, and it's trying to break above that a couple of times. And then
I should mention, I did buy some shares in Kavango. It must have been about a month ago. So I'm quite pleased to see that.
Yeah, you mentioned that, John. I think that's part of the reason why it's rallied. You know, a man of your experience and your stature. And your aura on board.
Then I wish that always happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why doesn't the share price pay attention to my stature, my aura, and my experience other times? But that's good. Yeah. So and it's broke out there. You can see there, nice. It's struggled for a long time to get above that level. Then it broke up, and now it's up. But let's look at that. You know, RSI is a bit heavy there, so it may have to consolidate. But it seems now that's the bottom. We've broken out. It seems like we're into a new range back up. The downtrend has ended. The uptrend may have started there. Downtrend ended. Range, uptrend. That's looking good. Cool. Any other stocks you want to talk about, John? Is there anything else? Sovereign, I don't think we've done them all, haven't we? So you've been at conferences quickly. Give us a sounding from that. What's the thoughts like? Who have you been chatting to?
Yeah, look, we were at the one-to-one conference in London, so it's all focused on mining. Slightly fewer people there than normal, but I would say, you know, we got to talk to family offices, specialist investment funds, and some of the big mining companies. I don't think there's a great shortage of cash around to buy into these stocks. Everybody's just thinking about where do they go. So I think there's a broader focus on critical materials and critical metals. Yes, everybody wants copper, and it's just a question of what can you buy. A lot of people looking closely for new discoveries. Now, the problem we've had is financing exploration, grassroots exploration. But I get the sense that there's more funding coming into that now. I mean, Kavango is an example of it, to be honest. That is grassroots exploration in Botswana. And you know, the reason I bought the shares is because I do think there's a really good chance they'll make a discovery. Mm. And also, I'm personally investing in a number of things where there is early stage grassroots exploration. I mean, you can't just invest in one company and rely on that making a discovery, because it doesn't work that way. You've got to buy a whole range of companies and hope that one of them has a successful hit.
Yeah. And there's no alternative. We mentioned this before, but I don't think anything's changed in the last couple of weeks since I asked this. But there's no alternative to copper, is there, pretty much?
Well, you can substitute copper, but it doesn't work very well. And it's so, for example, when copper prices rose in 2006, in China, they were substituting copper for aluminium in air conditioners. But you don't really want to buy an air conditioner that's got aluminium tubing in it, because it doesn't work very well. No, and when it comes to grid networks, so for example, if you're about to plug in your electric vehicle at the petrol station, you don't want a cable that's made out of aluminium. It isn't going to work. It's just not going to work properly.
Yeah.
The cable has to have a lot of copper in it. If you're connecting a wind farm in the North Sea to the UK grid, it needs to be a copper cable. Sure, it's got some steel wrapped around it to give it some strength, but you're quite happy to have a heavy cable that sinks into the seabed, and that has a lot of copper in it. If you're doing overhead high-tension power lines, yes, they are aluminium, because copper's too heavy for it. But there is no other real substitute.
Yeah, but for EVs and, like you said, for conductivity and wires, and there's no alternative that's it's fit for the purpose, really, isn't it?
For housing, you can use PVC plastics for piping. But again, copper is better because copper has antimicrobial and antiviral resistance properties. So I wouldn't want to, if I was having a house built, I wouldn't want it to have plastic piping all over it. I'd much rather it had proper copper. Yeah. And I'm quite sure your average plumber will agree with you on that.
Yeah, I'm a proper copper, mate. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so it's a bit worrying then, isn't it? There's a bottleneck, you know, for copper. I can't see, you know, the initial shoot up in the price. I can't see this stopping here. It may have to go sideways, but it'll probably move up again. So there we are. Marvellous stuff. John, thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you, Justin. See you then.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.